folks, it's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. I think we have a really interesting program for you today.
Like always.
I'm Steve Williamson, and I'll Klaus von Stutterheim.
You sound like you're out of a German war movie.
Right? I know. I was so surprised when I went to Germany and nobody ever sounded like a German war movie. I don't even know where that came from.
Max Schnell. But yeah. We're not here to discuss German war movies.
No, but it was interesting because in the Mosel Valley, everybody was very soft-spoken and nice. Coral Evans has long history in working for nonprofits. She's been on the Flagstaff City Council, reelected twice. Now you've been mayor of Flagstaff for two terms, mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're running for office.
I am.
Tell us, what are you running for?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show today. I'm really excited to be here, to have the opportunity to meet all of you who are in the room. I am from northern Arizona, Flagstaff, Arizona specifically. I am third generation. My grandparents got to Flagstaff by way of McNary, Arizona, mm-hmm. In the early 1900s when my grandpa found out that he could make 3 cents more an hour at the sawmill there.
Well, that's really interesting. And so you came to your political career from working in nonprofits on the Sunnyside area of Flagstaff, which is an area that I guess is one of the poorer areas of Flagstaff, and also one of the most multicultural, multiracial, multi everything, right?
It's definitely a working class neighborhood, had challenges as well. One of the most ethnically diverse neighborhoods in the city of Flagstaff. But I actually got my start, or I ran for office because of the Murdoch Community Center that was in the south side and some organizing work that I was doing there.
What brought that about? What does the center have to do with you running for office?
Well, at that particular time, the Flagstaff City Council had a budget overrun, a bond overrun of about $280,000. They had taken out a bond to fix the adult center, and they were short. They had decided that they were going to sell the Murdoch Community Center, and it was going to be torn down. The Murdoch Community Center was the site of the historic Dunbar Elementary School. That is one of the first black segregated schools in the state of Arizona. And it was desegregated almost 2 years before Brown versus the Board of Education by Superintendent of Schools Cromer and Wilson Riles, who was the principal of that school.
So you turned from organizing and managing nonprofits to going into politics and running for city council. What brought you to that decision? What was the spark to start running for office?
Because I really feel it's very important that everybody be represented and that everybody have the opportunity to be a part of the democratic process. One of the things that I'm very clear about when I talk to individuals is that I'm the mayor of the city of Flagstaff. That means that I represent the people who voted for me. That means I represent the people who did not vote for me. And that means I represent the people who could not vote for me. So we're talking about people who are under the age of 18, individuals who are undocumented, and individuals who have prison background records. Everybody's voice matters, everybody matters, and everybody should be a part of the process.
I think that including everybody is the way forward for not only for our country, but for almost all countries. The minute you begin excluding people, you begin to cause social problems, social unrest and stuff, and you can see it throughout the world. So you became a counselor, and what were the main issues? What was the driving force? I know that Flagstaff is basically, for folks from other parts, they barely see a Democratic city, mm-hmm. Democratic voting city. For a long time, it had a very conservative city council and mayor. How did things change so that you got something that was more representative of the general take on voters?
No, I think communities and societies change over time. And I think that when you talk about being accountable to the public, when you talk about making sure that everybody has a voice And when you talk about listening to what it is that the entire community needs, it really doesn't come down to what party. At a local level, we are elected in a nonpartisan fashion. So, for example, when someone calls me and says, hey, there's a pothole in front of my house that needs to be taken care of, I'm not asking what party that pothole is. I'm asking for the address and where it is and how can we get it fixed. The same thing with our parks and our libraries when it comes to plow and snow. It's really about all of us working together as a community. We're not really into the partisan issue.
I think that's very much true, and I think it's once we leave the local level, though, we get into very hard, very polarized partisan politics. But at the local level, I think it's the one place in the country where we still have nonpartisan decision making and a real sense of everybody in when we have a city or town. I know that's true in Sedona. You decided to run for LD6 for the state legislature as and tell us a little bit about what caused you to move from Flagstaff. I can guess because the state legislature has done so many things limiting just what you're talking about, the city's rights to be able to change and do things.
No, I'm a third generation Arizonan. Again, my grandparents got here in the early 20s. I live in a house that my grandfather built in 1942. One of the things I think we can all agree on as Arizonans is that local control is important. We live here in Arizona, and we live where we live in Arizona because we like that community. And each community is very different. And so the fact of the matter is right now at the state level, they are disregarding local control and the importance of having local control. Another reason why I'm running is as somebody from Arizona, I think it's embarrassing that our state is number 49th in the country when it comes to education. You know, we are the entrepreneurs of the West. We're the entrepreneurs of our country. And the fact that our education system is so disregarded is absolutely incredible to me. Another reason I'm running is because we have a major issue with water and our environment and how we treat that. Water is a finite resource. And we have been in northern Arizona tied up in water lawsuits since the 70s. That's millions and millions of taxpayer dollars. We need to get that resolved so we as a community, we as a region can move forward.
I think those are issues that certainly those are the principal issues or very principal issues here in the Verde Valley. And I think beyond, when I listen to the state, I know one issue in Sedona that's very important is the first one you talked about is local control. The fact that the state legislature took control of Airbnbs away from the cities, which allowed this massive displacement of the people who work in Sedona because they can no longer afford to live here. So I think that's an issue. And also water, my gosh, that's a complex issue. What can be done? I mean, about all the water situation, the complexity, the this kind of mild distribution of it, the kind of subsidized inner distribution to some folks and not to others.
So I'm starting with local control. You know, the state has enacted two laws that are really hampering our ability in this region, actually in the state of Arizona, to do anything when it comes to looking at the regulations for short-term rentals, as well as anything else we really want to do as cities. So we have something called SB 1487 that says if we do anything that the a state representative thinks is against some type of Arizona law, then cities and towns can be penalized and all your shared revenues from taxes can be taken away from you. And that's very problematic. What they also did to ensure that that happened is before cities and towns used to collect the sales tax, we would take our portion out, and then we would turn around and send the state's portion to them. They decided 2 years ago that all sales tax had to be remitted directly to the state. They then charge us a fee, cities and towns, and then they send the remainder of the money back. So, again, they're hurting taxpayers. There's also 1350, which is this Airbnb bill. It's shared economy where they said, hey, it's fair game. It's open. And that's why we're unable to regulate what's going on with short-term rentals. That is hurting our workforce. It's hurting our small businesses. It's hurting us as cities and towns as well. It's very problematic.
I think in the just in the local town, fewer and fewer are the people who work here, like what I did a few years ago, can afford to live in Sedona. They're more and more commuting. There was a time, I was told, 20 years ago or so, when the workforce of Sedona lived in Sedona, mm-hmm. and the Airbnb is kind of a nail in the coffin of being able to live in Sedona if you're mm-hmm. working here, if you're a working person.
And that erodes the quality of life, and that erodes your community as a whole. It also hurts you financially because the census is coming up, and the census, you get federal and state dollars by your population that lives in your city. Those dollars go into infrastructure projects. Those dollars help fund your schools. Those projects help fund, you know, the needs of a community. And if you don't have your workforce living here and they're having to drive in, then you're going to also lose those dollars that you need for your roads.
So you've decided to run for a state legislature that is Republican-controlled and extremely partisan, and I think very frustrating to deal with. How close in the House are we getting some sort of parity between Democrats or Republicans or something that will force more cooperation by everybody? And we're in a situation where they have complete dominance, and then they don't. The Republicans don't have to make any cooperation. They don't have to do anything with Democrats in terms of coordinating stuff.
You know, I decided to run for state representative because, as somebody who is from Arizona, again, for many generations, I just think that we need to be better represented down at the state house. I think one of the major problems down at the state is that the individuals who are at that level have never been elected at a local level. So you have individuals who have never served on a Flagstaff City Council or a school board, and so they don't have a direct connection with the people. And I think that's what allows this partisanship. I think what we need is more people at a state level who understand what cities and towns do and how they function, and understand that there's a separation between state duties and local duties, and allow cities and towns to operate in the fashion that they need to be sustainable and successful.
That's something I hadn't heard. That's very interesting. They went directly to running for the state house or the state senate without any local – they were never mayors or council people or anything, most of them. Mm-hmm. They went – there, and I think that brings a kind of ideological slant. In other words, you're working at the local level. It's really nonpartisan. It really doesn't matter who political party is, but we have a state senate and a state house that are elected with people who are ideologically driven.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why our state right now is currently 49th when it comes to education. I think that's why we have not been able to solve our water issues. I think that's why local control seems to be an issue. I think if you had more people that were at the state house that had an understanding of what it was like to serve at a local municipal level and understood what it meant to get things done for the people, we'd have a lot less problems.
And the governor, for example, the governor, for example, was elected with almost no political experience at all. He went directly from business, running a business, to being governor. And so his decision-making is based on whoever has his ear at any one time, plus an ideology, a libertarian ideology, which is what brought us the restrictions on being able to manage Airbnbs.
Now, I want to just mention that, you know, I have an MBA. I have an undergraduate in business management, and I'm currently ABD, all but dissertation, on my PhD program. I'm hoping to get that done this year as well, finish my PhD.
While you're running for office?
While I'm running for office. I'm one of those really motivated people. The reason why I bring that up, though, is because I think it's very important we as elected officials that we are very conscientious and we are very careful and we are very frugal when it comes to taxpayers' resources, including tax dollars and their time. I also, though, tell people we need to look at this through a slightly different lens. What is the return on investment of a park? What is the return on investment of a library? What is the return on investment of a well-maintained road? There are some things that you cannot measure in dollars and cents. So while we are applying this idea of running the government like a business, there are some things that you cannot quantify with simple dollars and cents, and we need to make sure that we understand that, and that we understand that if you're trying to do a return on investment of a city park, of the I-17 being appropriately maintained, you know, of rural and small urban Arizona, their businesses having ability to be successful, and sustainable long term, of having workforce housing in your city so the people who work for you actually get to live and be a part of the community that they're helping to build. What is the return on investment on that? You can't quantify that in dollars.
I want to come back to the question of education. You say that Arizona, sadly, is 49th in the country. And when I think back historically, in the 1800s, America was far ahead of the rest of the world because they required 12 years of schooling, while in Europe, kids usually went to sixth grade, if that far. So you had a literate, entirely literate population, and that had very significant economic repercussions in the 20th century. And so America was a bright leader in education, and suddenly America, it seems, not just in Arizona, has turned its back on education. And what is, I mean, is there any thinking behind it? Because talking about return on investment, what gets a better return on investment than a skilled and educated population? And how can that be fixed? Do you have to raise taxes to do it? Or do you, can you take something away from someplace else and really boost education to where it ought to be?
I think it's a mixture of all things. You know, my grandfather, he went to third grade. My grandmother, she graduated from seventh grade. Their grandchildren, one of them is a doctor, the other one's a mayor of a city, and the other one has a degree in international business and travels internationally. I think that we have managed to somehow, as a state and as a society, disinvest in our kids. I think you start first and foremost with the foundation, and that is with preschool and with kindergarten, making sure that kids have a solid foundation. I think we then need to make sure that on the other end, whether or not they want to go to college. I know I didn't go straight to college. I went to a tech school. I got a training certificate in computer operations, and that landed me my first job at W.L. Gore and Associates. Well, my first career job. I got my first job when I was 13 years old. But my first career job at W.L. Gore and Associates. I went from there to getting my bachelor's, my master's, and now I'm working on a PhD. I think that we need to be investing on both sides of the spectrum. We need to make sure that when you graduate from high school, you should have a tech certificate. So if you want to go straight and get a job, or if you want to go into a college, you can go and do that. We need to reinvest in our community colleges. As a state, we are divesting and pulling money away from community college. Those are where working adults go to get additional skills and to get the education that they need to advance up this career ladder. So I think we need to look at our entire system. We also need to be investing in our counselors, the other individuals, the one-on-one aides, all the individuals that make up the whole education experience. We also need to look at, you know, our prison system. We have a private prison system here in Arizona, and we're investing over $1 billion in that. If we were to actually look at the prison system and say, what can we do to make sure when people get out of prison that they are successfully integrated into our community, one of the things that I had the opportunity to do is I had the opportunity to start one of the first reentry programs in Coconino County, my organization that I worked with. And so I think that we can find dollars if we maximize the dollars that we have, and actually we do what we're supposed to be doing with those dollars, then why can't we reduce our current prison population by 25% and then take those additional dollars and add those to education? There's a lot of things we could be doing that we are not doing well.
Carl, good morning. I'm interested in that you've been on the campaign trail now for quite a while. What are you hearing from voters? What's the number one, number two issue you're hearing?
The number one issue has to do with local control, Airbnb, and what can we do to provide housing for the people that live in our community. The number two issue that I'm hearing has to do with education, and why is it we can't provide an education system for our kids that's meaningful. The number three issue has to do with our environment and water, and what are we doing to make sure that we have what we have now on into the future.
Now, Doug Ducey is going to give the state of the state, I think, tonight. If Carl Evans was giving the state of the state, and he's going to lie. He's going to lie about education, because that's what Republicans do. They lie about education when they're campaigning. Every Republican who's in office right now said education was their number one priority, and they were telling a lie. as the governor was. So if Coral Evans was doing the state of the state, knowing that her colleagues across the aisle will lie about public education, what is the state of the state of Arizona?
If I was giving the state of the state for the state of Arizona as the governor of Arizona, first and foremost, I would talk about all-day kindergarten for our young people, so they start out with a solid foundation. I would talk.
We don't have all-day kindergarten.
You have certain districts that have been able to put in additional monies to have a mandate.
You just looked at me like I was crazy. Like, you don't know that?
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, no, my
that's
mom,
fine, that's fine.
Just so you know, my mom was a school teacher. She taught kindergarten through third grade.
Yep.
And I myself taught GED, adult education, and ESOL, English for speakers of other languages. I would start out with implementing all-day kindergarten for our young people that are here in the state. That is first and foremost. The second thing I would do is I would say, okay, we need to return local control to the cities and towns so they can govern themselves with what is appropriate. You know, for example, when I talk about local control, you know, we are talking a lot about short-term rentals. But I just want to remind everyone that it's broader than that. In the city of Tempe, 90% of the voters, they had an election, and 90% of the voters said they wanted to know where money was coming from in their election. They were preempted by the state from doing that. You know, in Flagstaff, Arizona, we tried to talk about banning plastic bags because we were looking through our budget, and I realized it was $180,000 a year cleaning up plastic bags just at our landfill. And we were talking about cutting library hours, and we were talking about cutting a recreational center's hours. And I was like, hey, there's $180,000 there. We were preempted by that. In Prescott, their particular city council was talking about doing a ordinance in support of the Second Amendment. They're preempted from doing that ordinance. And in Tucson, they wanted to buy back guns and melt them down to get them off their street, and they're preempted. So it's a whole bunch of preemption that spans just everything that municipalities could do. So the second thing I would be talking about as governor is how do we make sure that cities and towns can govern themselves in a way that's appropriate. And then the last thing I would be talking about is our environment and the future of Arizona, and why don't we have a climate action and adaptation plan like the city of Flagstaff that really talks about how we are going to adapt to the new norms and how we're going to prepare for what's coming and how we're going to make sure that we have water for the people that are living here in Arizona for the next 100 years.
Carl, I heard Steve ask you before, because we're so professional here. Our cell phones never go off during the show or anything.
No, it never happens. And especially when it's potential spam. Don't hear a word for it.
He did.
I had to search for my cell phone.
Can I add one thing, though, too?
Yeah, go on.
One thing I would also emphasize if I was the governor, and I want to emphasize in my term as state representative, is that we are all Arizonans. We are all very different. We are all unique. We speak a variety of languages. Some of us come from here, and some of us come from other places. I'm proud that I'm third generation. We got people in Arizona who have been here 500 generations, right? One of the things that we need to do is we all need to be Arizonans. And I think that that is something that we need to be working on as our governor and as state representatives, is that we need to come together. If we're going to make our next 100 years and we are going to be successful and we're going to prosper, our small businesses, our children, us as individuals, then we need to be Arizonan and we need to act like it. And that's one thing that I don't see us doing down at the state, is acting like we are from Arizona and we know how to work together to get things done.
The other thing that you mentioned I thought that was important, maybe talk a little bit more about, is having a climate plan for the state. I know that Flagstaff's adopted plans. I know that Sedona here were concerned about it, but there is no overall statewide environmental plan to deal with it, climate change and all these other issues.
And there should be. You know, we live in a state that has extreme temperature, extreme weather fluctuations. We also live in a state that we know we have issues with water. We live in one of the most beautiful states in the world, in our nation, and one of the most beautiful places in the world. Northern Arizona is extremely beautiful. We have everything from, you know, the Grand Canyon to the desert scenery to just, you know, mountains. We get snow. It's a beautiful place. But we also know it's a fragile place, and we need to take care of our environment. And what does that look like? Having people having to travel 40 miles to and from work because they don't have a place to live where they work, that impacts us negatively. It also costs us a lot of money. You know, having uncertainty when it comes to do we have water, do we not have water, can we grow, can we not grow, that's problematic. The Verde River is iconic, and trying to figure out how to make sure that we maintain the life sources that are there, how people are able to recreate there, and how we preserve the fact that we also need to drink the water. These are things that we need to be talking about openly as a state, and we need to be coming up with a plan because, again, how do we get to the next generation? And actually, what is it? We're supposed to be planning for 7 generations out?
I have 2 questions. One of them, just curious, what's your PhD in? And then the other more important question is LD6. Can you describe where it is, where it starts, where it stops, and what the major population is? And if you know what the political distribution is of, independent Democrats and Republicans.
It's one of the most complex districts in Arizona and one of the biggest.
Yeah.
And it just goes everywhere. So
my PhD, I'm getting my PhD through Prescott College. It is a PhD in sustainability education. My emphasis is in policy and how we create policy that actually allows for cities and towns to thrive. LD6 is a huge district. It goes all the way from like Snowflake and Holbrook to Payson. It encompasses the entire Verde Valley, Cottonwood, Clarkdale, all the way over to Jerome. Comes back up through Sedona. We have Williams, the Grand Canyon, Tucson, and then of course Flagstaff. So it's a pretty big district. The ideology, again, I'm not worried about the ideology of or the political ideology of the district. What I'm interested in is what the district cares about and what the district needs to have happen to make the district successful.
Do you know what the numbers are?
I think we have approximately 150,000 people in the district. It'd probably be a third. I think Arizona, is broken into a third.
I mean, we had a representative, Bob Thorpe, who went around and tried to sabotage Sedona's relationship with the Chamber of Commerce, of all things, and went around and got somebody to complain to our beloved Attorney General and previous Attorney General and spiked the city. Be nice to have some representation that supported the cities and towns and people of the district, that represented the district rather than some conservative ideology.
That's perfect. I want to get back to that. You guys, earlier, you and Steve were talking about your political motivations and that non-politicians, non-office servers, let's put it that way, non-office servers somehow are serving at the state level, people without the experience that you have in local government, that you have in the school board, city council, mayor. I mean, all of these things matter. People that we have, once again, getting back, I'll take care of the ideology. Getting back to Republican ideology, people that hate government are in government. And I, this sort of self-loathing is like off the chart. I don't have a degree high enough in psychology to explain why people that hate government want to be in government. But here, so we want people that want to be in government. You have a candidate that has experience in government, is politically motivated. She has siblings that do other things, but
I would
somehow
say policy motivated.
She got the political gene, and she is here willing to represent us. But getting back, there was this whole movement culminating, of course, in the disaster in the White House of non-politicians of somehow being attractive to voters. And I think there's still some vestiges of that. So the question is, do you see any of that on the campaign trail still, that as you present yourself as an accomplished office holder, a little bit of, gee, we're not sure about you because you're a politician?
So one of the things I would say, there's a couple of things. is that in 2011, I had the opportunity to go through the Flynn Brown Leadership Program. So I'm a Flynn Brown Fellow. I can tell you when I first got into politics in 2008, it was somewhat embarrassing. You know, I was also the executive director of the Sunnyside Neighbor Association, and so I usually led with that and then backed into being a politician. Oh, yeah, by the way, I'm elected. Because people were like, oh, there's a politician. Oh, you know, this, that, and the other. You know, nowadays I'm not like that. When I went through the Flynn Brown Leadership Program, what I realized...
Am I correct? There's only one from each state that goes to that.
Oh, no, Flynn Brown, there's a total of usually 20 for the state that go through that program. Now, I am a part of the Hunt Keene Fellowship, the Governor's Fellowship, and there's one person from actually only about 20 of the states that get an opportunity to do that every year. But one of the things that we talked about is taking back the title and ownership of the label or the career or the really the calling of being an elected official. And so what I try to do is I try to lead as an elected official as I think others should lead. And so, you know, definitely you have some people like, oh, politicians. I'm like, no, I'm not actually trying to be a politician. I'm trying to be a statesman. And I think that there's a difference. And I think that it's important that you have people that care about their community, that understand policy, and that are willing to work with everybody to make sure that the appropriate policy gets done. I am the past chair of the Greater Arizona Mayors Association. That's basically all the mayors that are not down south and in Maricopa County. It goes all the way from Kingman to Holbrook. We're getting ready to add Springerville into the group next Friday. And the idea is, I don't know what the ideology of those mayors are, but guess what we all have in common? We all care about our communities. We're all working on short-term rental issues. We all want to know more about tourism and tourism dollars in our community and how to grow our small businesses. I cannot tell you, I think maybe out of all those mayors that are part of that group, two or three of them I might know what their political, I guess, letter is next to their name. Again, I think the problem with the state is that people are focusing on the letters and they're not focusing on people.
Let me give you you come out of nonprofits somewhat. And I've spent a lot of time in my life with nonprofits. And we've all heard of the golden rule, treat others as you would treat yourself. In nonprofits, we have the platinum rule, treat others as they want to be treated. Would you agree with that?
Yes, and there's also something else that we have as nonprofits and as the organizers, is that if you go and talk to the individuals who you're trying to help and ask them what they need to be successful, guess what? They're able to tell you. And if you will allow them to get what they need to be successful, they will be extremely successful. It's not about going in and doing for people. It's about making sure that they have the tools to do it for themselves.
There
because
is.
That is when it's become successful and long term.
There it is, as we used to say. We're listening to Coral Evans, candidate for LD6 State House.
State House. And
State House.
Who else is running, Coral? I mean, for the state house in LD6.
You know,
or do we know yet?
This is actually my radio show. I'm here today to talk about me.
Excellent.
If they want to talk about themselves, I think they should come on your show.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't think there's some of them we'll see here, Coral. But
this is my time.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. So, during your time. What else is there what is the thing that's going to put you over the top? You got your brain trust back here, you got your own experience. How do you see this playing out?
I plan on going out and talking to as many people, as I can talk to. It does still work. You know, when I ran for mayor, when I ran for council, I knocked on every door in Flagstaff. I plan on knocking on every door in this district. And I plan on talking about what's important to us as northern Arizonans, right? What's important to those of us that live in rural Arizona and in small urban Arizona. I really think it's about talking to people and being like, hey, what do you care about? What is your values? What are your core values that you care about?
So you're going door to door or trying to have a door to door campaign. Mm-hmm. And what else are you focusing on the technical stuff of getting elected, getting your message out to people?
Well, you know, there's going to be the social media ads. There's going to be the radio ads, definitely different house parties and things like that.
Tell us your website address. Okay. And, folks, you can go on Coral's website, Coral Evans' website, Mayor Evans' website, and find out what her program is, much of what you've been talking about, and also maybe information on how to contact if you want to volunteer, if you want to donate.
Yeah. So my website is CoralEvansAZ.com. Again, that's CoralEvansAZ.com. You can also find me on social media, which would be Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, by going to Coral4. That's the number 4, AZ. Again, that's Coral4AZ, and you can find me on any social media platform that way.
I do have an education question from a listener, and I don't always read listeners' questions, but this one the listener is asking, are our schools taking advantage of all available federal grants? Because I know sometimes conservative Arizona doesn't do that, and it was my experience in schools. And do schools have grant writers, and would it help?
So I would say that the schools that are able to are probably writing for as many grants as they can write for. Do I think grant writers will help? Without a doubt. Grant writers need to be funded.
There you go.
And I think that that's
important.
They don't
work for free?
They don't work for free. And also I would say that if we are going to rely solely on grants to help make sure that our schools are where they need to be, I'm not sure that's the best education policy, because grants come and go. I can tell you, as somebody that, you know, works for a nonprofit, the biggest buzz 1 year might be, I don 't know, youth. You know, 2 years later it might be people with disabilities. A couple years later it might be, you know, people who are incarcerated. So it's cyclical in nature. What we need to do is just appropriately fund our education system in the state of Arizona, and then if we want to go out and get grants to help provide additional services, great. But I don't think that we should be relying on that as our way to fix the current problem that we have.
Yes, having tax-supported, fully funded schools is the idea, and that you have skin in the game, and you should care about your schools. You could come and talk. If you don't like the way money's being spent, show up at a school board. If you don't like the way the city's spending money, show up and complain to the mayor.
I think that's a great point that Coral made too, Mike, is that the cities and towns are really very accessible. I mean, people can actually just talk to you. They can talk to members of the city council. They can talk to people. You can talk to people running for office. If you have questions, like the question sent in to Mike from one of our listeners, you can actually ask her. You can just actually talk to her. And I think that particularly school boards would love to hear from people. They'd like to have people show up at their meetings. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's all the way from community colleges all the way down. I think people decide that government is not nearly as accessible as it actually is on the local and on the statewide office. Now, when you get much bigger, you've got millions of people in the country, it becomes, you know, a harder thing to participate. But I think that people underestimate the fact they can just go and talk to you and ask you about one of your issues. Like, you worked with prisoner rehabilitation, getting them integrated into the community. Does it really work? Can you really help people? Can we take people who've been imprisoned and get them to be reliable?
Yes, you can. It happens each and every day. You know, what needs to happen, it needs to happen from a more broader sense with more people. But without a doubt, you know, each and every day you find people who have some type of background that are getting out of jail or prison who are integrated successfully back in their community. You also have people that are not. A lot of times the reason why they're not is because the services that they need to be successful are not there.
I know that that people have lost faith in we have such a large incarcerated population, and they're going to get out, all of them. And then we don't have a program, Coral, maybe in Flagstaff you do, but we don't have a statewide program to reintegrate them, to get them so that they have the tools to be successful. People don't believe it, that any of these things work. And I think that you have to – I think it's a good thing that you say that you have helped people and they have gotten back into society, gotten on their feet, gotten jobs, whatever.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that the system lets down not only people that are not inside, but it also lets people down that are inside that are getting out, right? When you get out of prison, there's supports that you need. You know, we talk about workforce housing. We also need halfway housing for individuals. We need the ability for people to get jobs. We need the ability for people to have health care. And we have problems having health care on the outside, and you have people who are getting out that need health care, that need mental health services, that can't get mental health services. You know, I remember one time we were working with two individuals that were released from prison. They were released with a prison ID that they could not use to get a state ID. One of them did not have his prescription that he needed. They had no information about any classes or workshops they took on the inside. They didn't have a social security card, and they didn't have a birth certificate, and they're supposed to get a job.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, that wasn't exactly helpful. And if you think about the dollars that we spend having someone go to prison, the money that we spend, we definitely wasted that money when we released those individuals without the tools that they needed to get a job successfully, right?
We just
threw that money away.
It seems so reasonable what you're saying, that to support people who are incarcerated when they get out, have a program for them. It seems like a no-brainer, right, Mike? But we don't do it. The state doesn't fund it. The federal government doesn't fund it to an extent.
Right? I mean, it's not something that voters are screaming for.
No, it's not. But it's something that would help reduce crime and help actually invigorate our society.
And it's also something, if we want to address our budget and we want to understand where our money is going and we want to fund things like education, like universities, like community colleges, you know, like health and human services, then we need to stop and look at the totality of where our money is being spent. And are we spending it in a way that it allows us to free up dollars to do other things that we as a community and a society keep asking for? You know, if we were to really look at our prison population, say we want to reduce it by 25%, how much is that? And what thing can we better utilize that money on? It's those types of nuances.
That's a great way to look at it, to see how you can reduce the population as a way of saving money and really changing lives. Arizonans, as all of Americans, lives are irrevocably changed when they go to jail.
My grandpa used to say, if you watch your pennies, they turn into dollars.
There you go.
And so one of the things, I go back to the example of the plastic bags in the city of Flagstaff. We were looking at having to reduce library hours, and we were looking at having to close a youth facility, you know, that was providing after-school programming. So I took the budget, book about, you know, yay thick, I don't know, 4 inches, and I went through every line item. I'm like, okay, where am I going to find my pennies that are going to add up to dollars? When I looked at that, I'm like, why are we spending $180,000 at the landfill? I needed $150,000 to save those two things. I'm like, why are we looking at that? And so when I found out we were literally using $180,000 to pick up plastic bags, I'm like, there's got to be a better way we can do that trash at the landfill and maintain our library hours and our after-school programming at this rec center.
We're listening to this common sense from Coral Evans, candidate for LD6 House. Please, 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 Coral Evans, Coral Evans, Coral Evans. I feel like we haven't said her name enough during the 45 minutes of the show. Coral Evans is running for
check
LD6.
Check out her website.
Yes.
And contact her. We're running out of time.
Find her info. Yes, we are running out of time.
CoralEvansAZ.com.
And in 15 seconds, what's next? Where are you going next?
I'm going back to work. I'm getting ready to hit the campaign trail.
All right, going back on the trail. Look for Coral Evans in a city or town near you, ladies and gentlemen. We want to thank Democrats of the Red Rocks for all of their good help and helping keep Democratic Perspective on the air. We want to remind you that you can listen to all of Coral Evans, Coral Evans, Coral Evans. Great speech, great campaign information on our website on vvid.org, vvid.org. We'll have this show within a day or two. And you can listen and pick apart her speech and write us letters and write her letters. And you can find.
We will forward them to her.
We will forward them to her. I'm more than happy to come back on air
and also answer them.
Well, that's true. We have a lot of time before the election.
It's a busy week in activities. The Door Breakfast is on Thursday. The Women's March is on Saturday. The Door annual meeting is on Sunday, folks. Check on the internet.
This election year is coming in like a lion for sure. VVID.org. Thanks for listening to Democratic Perspective, folks. See you next time.
Bye-bye.
That was great.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZ. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.